BTW, FYI, tap the banner ASAP to learn about Nexplanon, etanogestrel implant 68 milligrams radiopaque, or ask your HCP IRL. Visit Nexplanon.com RN. K-T-T-Y-L.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, before we get started, I'm going to tell you a little bit about our friends at Geico. And we've got a big show today. Alistair Weaver's in the studio again. We're going to talk about Shelby GT500s, Corvette C8s, and a lot more. But first, everybody's got a to-do list. Maybe you're dropping off your dry cleaning or picking up some milk. Now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance and you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. Just go to geico.com and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Be sure to check out Geico.com. And of course, our friends at Dodge, visit your local Dodge dealer for performance, technology, and great deals. Never has there been a better time than right now. Dodge is offering Power Dollars. With Power Dollars, you get $10 off for each horsepower of your new car. That's every 2019 Dodge Charger, every 2019 Durango, every 2019 Challenger. You could buy a 2019 Dodge SRT Hellcat Red Eye and receive an almost $8,000 cash allowance. So you get more power and you get more off. It's pretty simple. Hurry to your local Dodge dealer today and take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. All right, let's get started. Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator. DeAndre, we got Bill Goldberg on the phone and in studio once again, our dear friend Alistair Weaver. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you, Matt?
Oh, good. So we've got a short amount of time with Bill today because he's busy. Tell us what's going on, buddy.
Well, we're doing a little commercial at the Goldberg Garage. You know, usually it's traveling halfway across the country and going on set somewhere else, but I've got the caveat and I don't know what I got. I'm just lucky that they're all here and I ain't got to go elsewhere.
It's busy. You're filming a commercial at your place. You better hurry up because that house is on the market now.
Yeah, I know. Thank God. here's the cool deal, though. Yeah. Here's the cool deal. It's a web contest giveaway from Dodge.
Yeah,
and they're giving away 5 Hellcat Red Eyes.
Oh.
And for the first time ever, these 5 Hellcat Red Eyes will have more horsepower than the Dodge Demon.
How?
Just chew on that one for a while. And they're making 5 of them, and they're giving them away through an internet contest. So keep your eyes peeled, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to be the new owner of the most powerful Dodge Challenger ever built. Forget about the Demon. This has got 15 more horsepower than the Demon, even with the chip in it. So,
ooh, I like that.
And I just found that out a minute ago, and I'm actually trying to steal all 5 of them. So,
you know, don't get greedy. Just take 2.
I just want 1. And you know what's cool, too, is they brought the sleigh to the house.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So Goldberg Claus has 2 sleighs at his house, one real one and one made out of a red eye. So,
yeah.
It's pretty cool, man. It's a cool deal. Obviously, you know what I did last weekend up in Milwaukee with Leah breaking that world record for the Demon. Twin turbo ran an 8.6, I think 151 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I didn't kill myself in my car. Didn't have a roll cage, didn't have belts. So all I could pull out was a 10 flat. So, you know, I'd say it's fairly respectable.
That's fast.
It was fun. I think that car's got a hell of a lot more in it.
Oh, yeah.
And next episode, man, I'll have to download about the all-wheel drive carbon fiber 1,300 horsepower twin turbo Hellcat wide-body charger.
Isn't all-wheel drive cheating?
No, it's just different. Alistair wants to know if all-wheel drive is cheating.
Cheating. What is it cheating?
I don't know.
Yeah.
If you're going against two-wheel drive, I don't know. No, actually, we talked to the guys. We talked to the gearhead fabrication guys, and they said that the two-wheel drive cars are, when they get them dialed in for the drag strip and the tracks prep, they're faster.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
How does that work?
It's more of a novelty than it is anything, because they use the base all-wheel drive charger, which is pretty much normal for the police cars now.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said the all-wheel drive chargers, and when they set it up for drag racing, they run it 50-50 ratio front and rear.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, like 80% in the rear, and just like, you know, it's a little different than like a GTR or something, but that's just
how they... Yeah, it also depends where the weight is, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes, but. Yeah. I don't know. I think at some point down the strip, it starts pulling a little bit instead of pushing, you know?
Right.
And, you know,
all
I don't
can
know
tell
it
you is it's terrifying.
I'm sure it is. All right, buddy. Well, enjoy your filming today. Enjoy the commercial that you're making. We can't wait to see it. Next week, for sure, let's catch up on the Wisconsin trip and more SEMA prep, man. We got lots of stuff going on out there. There's appearances, there's shows, there's live CarCast shows, there's stuff with Hot Wheels and Kane and air filters and then your car and my truck will both be out there in the MagnaFlow booth out front, the MagnaFlow semi-truck area. So come out and see
Green
those.
Green Demon will be at Weld Wheels, too. So catch us on Tuesday, man. I'll be doing appearances at six different places, and then I'm off to do the Goldberg. So
I'm actually looking.
You guys rock CarCast. I know you can do it without me, because now you can talk about other things other than horsepower. We got that out, American horsepower. We got that out of the way in the beginning, so... rock and roll, gentlemen. You guys have a great day. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm looking forward to coming to SEMA and actually seeing these cars in it for real, Bill. So I should be there on the Tuesday. So I'll look you up, and looking forward to seeing all the toys.
Please do, my friend. Please do. You guys have a great show. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, buddy. Okay. Bye. All right. It's good. He's excited. It's 100 degrees outside. He's doing a Christmas commercial.
Yeah, that makes sense.
in the desert. Now.
Why is Santa so sweaty?
Yeah, right? Why is he so Jewish? he's working hard. He's working hard. You think he's going to wrestle again?
Bill?
Yeah.
I tell you what, my Twitter is full of, you know, like picture. But I looked at one the other day and I thought this must be kind of a retro image. I realized it was like a month ago or something.
It was a month ago.
He's in ridiculous shape for a guy in his
50s. He's in his early 50s, the guy. Yeah, he definitely keeps himself in great shape. I think he's going to wrestle again. I think he'll be back in the ring. I don't want to give anything away because I can't say for sure, but I'm pretty sure. I'm going to say for sure.
It's kind of inspiring, actually.
All right, so you have some exciting stuff. We were talking on the phone last night, and I was telling you that my next trip is this coming weekend, and I'm heading out to Vegas, which I assume is going to be 195 degrees outside. And I've been invited to the event to drive the new Ford Shelby GT500 on a track out there, which I'm very excited about. I think it's a cool car. It looks great. The power seems great. And it might just be big and ridiculous. Who knows? But it's just everything kind of that we enjoy over here on for those types of cars. But you're not going to this event.
I have to come here and talk to you.
Yeah.
We have people, actually, Carlos Lago and some of our video team are actually driving out there literally now. They just texted me from the car. So they're on their way to Vegas to drive it. We're making a film about it, which I'll be out shortly. So, yeah, we're going big on it. It's a car that everybody enjoys. It's a proper Americana, isn't it? And you know, I kind of with my accent, I can't do that video. It doesn't. I can't pull that off.
Well, you might win one of those red eyes that Bill's talking about. Then you'd be fully you're Americanized at that point.
The YouTube comments. If I did the GD, I tell like we are at Edmunds. We're actually buying one. I'm so super excited. We've got a build date probably around December. It's not fairly guaranteed yet, so quite early in the process. I'm actually going to go up to Detroit, and this is a big reveal, a big exclusive. But we're going to go out and go up to Detroit and actually film it being made, which will be hugely exciting. So actually go down the production line and be like, you know, here comes the engine and everything else. So I'm super excited about that. And,
how Are they just starting production in December? Are you guys early on the list? Is this going to be?
Yeah, we thought we've actually been delayed a little bit, but I think we're pretty early. I mean, we're just, you know, we're buying it. It's a customer car, so it's not there's nothing trick about it. So, but we just asked the permission to go and film it, and we're working with Ford on that, and we've had a lot of fun just speccing it out and working out which one.
So you guys, like us over here, we are often given press cars to drive and evaluate, and we try to be pretty honest about everything, but
sure.
But you guys do that. I know you do that, but also you buy cars for Edmunds.
Yeah, I mean, basically it's a bit of a mix. So we tend, how it works is, you know, we get cars on a two-weekly basis, which we call a short-term loan. So whenever a new model comes out, we have about 300 cars a year through the office. So
yeah.
Literally, I mean, it's a very privileged position, isn't it, really? Literally every night, pretty much, I have a different car. And that's the kind of meat and drink of what we do. But on top of that, we run a long-term test. The problem is with 2 weeks, we get loads of different people through. I mean, we've got 35 people in the team. Lots of people drive the car. Lots of people offering an opinion. We do take it to test track, and there's a real process. But on top of that, we like to run cars on what we call our long-term fleet, which is all about living with them. Mm-hmm. And we think that's really important because that's what real people do. And that does tend to show up slightly different things. You know, there's a little bit of reliability in there. But also, you know, we have a Chevy Bolt and the seats are terrible. And just things like that start to grate
right.
on you more
and you
over
gotta,
the process.
You got to give it a month to figure out, right? Like,
there's some truth in that, definitely. And if you look at our site, we're actually just relaunching it at the moment, all our long-term test pages. But they're all about what it's like to live with. And we want, and that's a real mixture. We've got a Honda Accord, a CRV, trying to think what else, a Ram 1500.
How many miles do you jam onto a car in a year?
Because about 20,000.
About 20,000.
About 20,000.
So you're basically trying to simulate two and a half years of ownership in 12 months.
Exactly. And of course, also what we have is a wide variety of people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, different heights, different sizes and everything else. So but also people with lots of experience of different cars. And, you know, I always think this is slightly different about our industry. If you look at TripAdvisor, you believe that the person reviewing the hotel has probably stayed in 30 hotels of that type. With cars, it's different because it's all about access. And in order to judge an Accord, you've got to have driven a Camry and et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of where we're coming from. Most of our fleet is, you know, the big sellers, Ram 1500s and stuff. But
yeah,
also we wanted to have some fun and to generate some noise and in a literal sense.
If you get something like a GT500 in the fleet, is that car always taken, or do most people kind of sign up for like a RAV4 because they want something like a little more convenient?
I think a GT500 will always be taken.
I think it's going to always be taken. That's going to have 70,000 miles on it in a year.
Every time somebody goes on vacation or something, hang on.
Yeah, I'll take a GT500. Right. Yeah, is there like a calendar? Is there like a list you sign up
for? It's,
like,
Google sheet. But can't say that, can I? A Google sheet.
Yeah.
But it is difficult because, I mean, like I spent last week in and out of different Explorers and missed the RS5, the Audi RS5, because actually the Explorer is the car that I should be driving. The RS5 is the car that I want to drive. I just didn't happen to be around. But yeah, GT500, super excited about. I can talk you through the spec if you like. Also, put our name down for a Corvette, mid-engine Corvette, because we just know there is so much interest in that car.
Yeah. So, okay, I think you picked two cars that, but first of all, this makes good sense. Let's just say it what it is from an editorial standpoint. You pick two American Halo cars.
Yeah.
And that's always a traffic driver for us, for shows like yours, you know, for sites like yours. People want to see that stuff. It's interesting. I don't know how many they're going to sell, but there's always the Halo cars and you know, those things like you're saying, like the Audi, the RS5. I don't know how many people are buying an RS5, but that's a car that brings people into a brand.
I mean, I look at traffic to the site and traffic to our social and mm-hmm. traffic to video, and you know, it's a car that I mean, a lot of people will buy the Corvette, but you know, it's actually, you know, a lot of people also buy normal Mustangs, and the GT500 mm-hmm. is and you know, what part of my job at Edmunds is to help get the brand out there, get people understanding what we're doing. What we will do is actually approach it from an Edmunds perspective. I'll give you an example. I drove a Lamborghini the other week, the Huracan Performante.
Yeah, I like that one.
A lovely car, but I read a bunch of reviews.
Did you drive the white convertible?
Yeah, I think we had the same car. Yeah,
they don't have 40 of those that are press fleet out here, by the way. They have one.
But we drove that, and I read a bunch of reports, and you get so much now on, you know, YouTube and everything else. And I was like, there's two massive problems with that car. One, the trunk is basically non-existent.
Yeah, it's not why you buy it, but keep going.
And two, if you're over 6 foot, you basically can't drive it. I mean, I'm 6 foot.
Never had that problem.
It was a problem. That's why we had different people in the team. But nobody actually calls this out. So from an Edmunds perspective, what we're trying to do across whatever car it is, actually talk about how does this car work for you? And, you know, we all love Lamborghinis and supercars and stuff. But actually, if you can't take it on vacation for a long weekend because there's no trunk space.
Aside from not being able to carry anything and you not fitting in the car, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds great.
It sounds great, and it sounds like it's amazing, and it's fast, and it's an eye catcher.
I did feel quite self-conscious in it there.
Yeah. Did you? Because your head's above the windshield.
Well,
like,
that and just it's so not. I don't know. I don't know these days. I get a bit self-conscious in cars like that with the roof down and stuff. I don't know. Maybe it's me.
I only put the roof down at night. I don't like it during the day. It's too much sun. I don't like cancer. I don't know what it is. Like, I'm not really. Maybe on like a cloudy day or something. You know, we don't get many of those here. But you know, like,
no, I love the car.
You're out here now. You maybe get up in the morning, go for, you know, walk the kids or dogs or whatever you got to do in the morning, and you start to see Halloween decorations in people's windows, and then you realize it's 98 degrees outside.
Yeah.
And you're like, the math doesn't work on that. But I kind of like, you know, like a drop the top at night and cruise around, up, you know, grab some dinner or something up toward the Malibu and take that nice little drive.
Lovely.
That's a nice little drive. You don't need to bring bags.
No.
For that. You don't need to bring, you know, besides, let's face it, you're not going on a weekend trip. You got a brand new baby at home, so you're not going on a weekend trip anywhere.
That's true. Actually, going back to the GT500, one of the things that we...
Yeah.
Because Ford's obviously launching with the carbon pack and everything else, but actually, the one that we've gone for, what we tried to do is specify the one that actually works as a road car.
Let's talk about that.
It's about 120 degrees in the studio, by the
way. Yeah, it's super hot in here, by the way. I'm not sure what's going on. Maybe Chris is going to come in and...
Give us a massage, a bit of cold towel.
He's going to come and he's going to blow on us. How did you spec out the GT500 and why?
So the big thing, if you look at the, I'm sure we all love to play with configurators and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And you can pretty much drive it to $100,000 if you add the carbon pack, which gives you the big GD4 rear wing and the carbon wheels.
Where does it start? What's the base price?
$7,300.
That seems really low. $73,000 maybe.
$70,300.
We don't do that.
Okay.
$70,300 is the base price.
$70,300 for the base
price.
And
you can go up to $100,000.
If you start putting the track pack on and everything else, the carbon pack, sorry, you very quickly get to $100,000. And to be honest, the carbon pack is one of those things that... It's like $18,000 or something.
What is it? Carbon fiber wheels, some
wings,
splitter,
tires, splitter. But so what we wanted, and also the problem is then you lose the rear seat, so it becomes less usable.
Is the carbon package also what they were calling a track package?
Sort of
a combination of the two?
It is kind of, but it's mainly the carbon aesthetics and stuff. What we're going to do is we're not going to buy that one, and I'll explain why in a moment. But then we're going to, at some point in the future, we'll borrow one with the carbon pack on. We'll put them head to head and we'll actually show what difference, like $18,000 with the carbon fiber actually means. The tires will make a difference because it's got super sticky tires, but actually we can just buy those anyway.
Yeah, you can buy tires.
And actually the carbon wheels you can probably add later down. Arguably that might make a difference on spring mass and all the rest of it, but we can add those later anyway. So we went for standard car, Twister Orange, which is $500.
I saw that color at Bear Jackson Scottsdale last year.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's bright.
technology package, which is just sensible stuff like sat nav and things like that. It makes it a bit easier to live some of the safety stuff. Handling package, which gives you the suspension, and that gives you the gurney flap. It's not a suspension, it gives you the gurney flap and the little splitter wickers and stuff at the front.
Now the standard configuration, whether it has the handling package or not, comes with a Magnum Ride.
Yeah. You've got the Magnum Ride.
Maybe it's tuned differently if you order it with the carbon fiber wheels.
I don't think so. You're gonna find out this week, but I don't believe so. I believe it's simply just buying the carbon. Handling package we've got. What else? Painted black roof. And that's kind of about it. Then you've got gas guzzler taxes and stuff. So that brings it all in at $79,685. So it's an $80,000 car.
So for 80 grand, it sounds like you're getting a lot of car, though.
You are getting a lot of car. 760 horsepower, isn't it, off the top of my head? What is that?
And then you could add $18,000 of carbon stuff. Is there anything else you think that's missing from
the options? No, there's nothing really missing. So all you would
do... Oh, is there like a stripe or a stripe delete kit?
You can have stripes if you want. This is purely aesthetic stuff. Yeah, you can have stripes.
Now, aren't the stripes expensive because they're painted?
The stripes, I'd have to look that up, Matt. I can't remember. I know we just
looked
at it and thought it
looked... something. Like, I think the GT350 or the GT350 has a vinyl stripe, but it's inexpensive, $500 or something, $700. And I don't know if you can get vinyl or paint or if it's just paint, but it's really expensive.
I know we looked at it, and actually it was just purely on aesthetic grounds. We just thought the stripes looked a bit naff, so we just kept it pretty simple. But the gurney flap looks really cool. We actually think the rear wing with the gurney flap as opposed to the big kind of... Because the problem is with the carbon pack, then you get this big sort of GT4 style rear wing, this like shelf on top of the rear, which just looks a bit, to my eyes, looks a bit aftermarket. Whereas the gurney flap looks really kind of nicely integrated and looks very cool.
Now, what's your prediction on visibility? Because I remember a while back you rolled up here in a ZR1 with all the crazy wing package on it, and you couldn't open the trunk. Like, I get it. It's not why you buy that car, but like it was probably difficult to drive around town.
Yeah, a little bit. I think
on the track it's great, but on the 405 up to here, you know, on the freeway here, it's like maybe not the ideal car.
I think the GT500, I haven't driven it yet, and you'll find out this weekend, but I think the GT500 will be fine. I mean, it's basically a Mustang. The one thing it hasn't got, of course, is the stick shift, which the GT350 does have, and it has the flat plane crank, which the GT500 doesn't have. So you're gaining horsepower, you're gaining speed, obviously, with the gearbox that it does have, but it's, I don't know, part of my appeal for me of Mustang's always that fantastic manual box.
And the GT350 does nail it as far as the sound and stuff like that. They've made a couple revisions, but what they didn't do is they didn't step up to like the new dash and stuff. It still has like the two analog dash gauges, and the new Mustangs and the Bullet and the GT500 has the big digital dash. It's all configurable and stuff. So the GT350 still has, which is interesting because they've done some updates to the car, like, oh, we revised the suspension and we do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But they didn't upgrade any of the dash stuff. I'm not sure why.
It's probably just a cost thing as
yeah,
we go down
the
line.
Yeah, maybe it's just a cost thing, but...
Years in my previous life, I shot a documentary on the development of the Focus RS. I spent 3 years with Ford's development team, and this is before I joined Edmunds. And alongside developing the RS, we came over to the US to shoot the doco, and they had a GT350 in development then. So I actually got to see them going through with the troubles with that engine and everything else. And I think that's probably part of the reason why the GT350 doesn't use that engine, the flat plane crank.
Did you guys buy a GT350?
No, we haven't bought one of those. But we will...
Do you have some insight into the longevity of that engine?
I know some of the race cars don't use it. I don't... Not...
Yeah.
Not...
I mean, I'm not hearing a lot about it, but, you know, not like the Focus RS heads that had a little bit of issue, and I think it's problem solved now or something. But
there's not a lot. I mean, I guess there's not a huge amount out there and how much they've been used and stuff. But no, it's just interesting. But also, you know, bear in mind the GT500's got 760 horsepower, so you're putting a lot more stress on it.
Yeah. Now, do you think you're going to be disappointed, or you think you're going to be satisfied with the 7-speed DCT, the transmission there?
I think day in, day... I mean, I love stick shifts.
Yeah.
Day in, day out, I think it'll be a nice thing to live with. And the thing is, it's so fast now that this is the problem. Once you get 700-plus horsepower, you can't, you know, managing a stick shift with that becomes extremely difficult.
Do you think Ford anticipates that they're going to limit it, or they won't sell enough to justify the DCT and an optional manual?
Yeah, I guess it'll come
down
to...
They had to pick
one. It'll
be
cost.
And they needed the performance numbers, right? Because they need to brag about the car.
Yeah.
And the DCT is the way to brag about the car. But do they do sort of a Porsche 911 move and they go, oh, you know, we're going to do a GT500 touring car and offer it with a manual and less wing, you know, something like that. Does that make sense for Ford? I don't know that it does.
I don't think so. I think for the numbers that they do, and, you know, bear in mind Porsche's in a different price bracket with things like GT3 Tourings, and they already have the box, and it probably doesn't make sense in the same way that additional versions of the Focus RS. There was some talk of doing kind of like nutty versions of that that be of above and beyond the production mm-hmm. car. You know, these guys have got to build a business case. It doesn't really work. So,
well, that's what we have the aftermarket for. For every manual car, someone will swap in a sequential transmission. And for every, you know, sequential or DCT or something, somebody will swap in a manual. They'll be like, I just like the manual. And I probably, other than like the tuning and stuff, probably swapping in a Tremec into a GT500 is easy. You know, yeah, I mean, we know it fits.
It'd be interesting to see where the market goes with that. I mean, we know that Dodges and everything else have got a huge aftermarket. It'd be interesting to see what people start to do with GT500s. Yeah. But
and if the GT500 becomes available as a crate engine, it's very likely it won't include a complex DCT.
Yeah.
Right. So there's probably going to be some sort of 6-speed or 7-speed manual, probably some Tremec 6-speed, version of that. So I would imagine, and it wouldn't surprise me if at SEMA this year, one of Ford's announcement is a GT500 crate engine.
That'd be interesting. Yeah. Right.
And then they're going to – and then eventually they're going to say, hey, we're going to do it. It will be available. We're working on the box for it, and then we're working on the transmission for it, because the standalone computers that they sell for their crate engines has to take out all the other junk, the ABS and all the other tie-ins, you know, for the full car, so you can do it in a hot rod environment. But
you know, it's a lot of power.
It's a lot of power. Look, there's a Helifant engine. They got a 1,000 horsepower crate engine, which they can't make enough. Like they announced 100 of them they sold in a day or something like that. You know, all of a sudden everyone needs a 1,000 horsepower crate engine for what? I have no idea. But all right, so when are you going to go? You're going to go in December.
That we're looking like December for that. And then we will follow it with a Corvette.
With a Corvette. Let's get into that. First, I'm going to tell you guys about Zorro. If you purchase supplies for a business, you know that it's nearly impossible to find everything you need in one place. That's why there's Zorro.com, where the number one goal is to make your life easier. It's Zorro, Zorro.com. It's where you'll find everything you need for any business of almost any industry. Zorro.com has tools and equipment, safety and office supplies, cleaning supplies, and more. Zorro has tons of stuff for industries like electrical, plumbing, contracting, manufacturing, and more. You'll find brands that you know and trust, like Stanley, 3M, Milwaukee, Schneider, and Rubbermaid, just to name a few over there. Zorro.com offers amazing customer service for real people based in the U.S. You'll also enjoy fast, free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Even if you don't have a business to shop for, you can still find lots of great items at Zorro.com. Right now, if you sign up for their Z-Mail newsletter, you'll get 15% off. This is what you do. You go to Zorro.com/carcast. That's Zorro.com/carcast. Sign up for the newsletter. Get 15% off your first order. All right. Corvette. Completely different animal, but also like everyone's going to test those two together because they're American muscle and similar money, big iconic American brands, Ford's sports car, if you will, Chevy's sports car, front engine versus rear engine, rear mid, front mid versus rear mid. I don't know. It's just like, of course, we're also reading. I want to get your thoughts on this too. A little bit of a hiccup over at GM with, fighting with labor unions and some delays on getting the C8s built. And, I know I think they were trying to ship cars by the end of the year. It doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's been a tough time. And, they may well be, I think we're hearing of modest delays, a month or so. Just to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable if you stop production because, that cars don't get built. It's fairly straightforward. But,
They have to convert the plan for the C7s over to C8. You got to end C7 completely. You got to ramp up for C8.
It's a big – people underestimate just how complex. And that's what one of the things that we're going to try and show with the GT500 build film is, this is the money and the complexity and everything else of building cars. And, our old friends at Tesla are, fast discovering this. And, we saw in the last couple of weeks with Dyson, the electric, they're fantastic at building vacuum cleaners and spent, God knows how much, tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars on electric car program, which they've now canned because they can't see a business case.
Right.
So, you know, this is
expensive. It's a tough concept they put together.
It's a tough business, this. And, you know, Chevy and Ford have been at this a long, long time, and, you know, it's tough for them too. So, you know, it all takes time and it all takes engineering. And
let me ask you this before we get into the build of your Corvette. A lot of people think that they shouldn't buy like the first generation of a car because it needs to work out its bugs. And we do see time and time again, Ford Explorer, the new Ford Explorer is an example we can get into in a minute.
Yeah.
Shelby GT500 potentially is new enough, could have some bugs, but on a platform that's kind of been around a little bit.
Yeah, most of it's
proven. They sort
of
refined a lot of their magnetic ride, the Magna Ride, and you know, the engine that it's based on, and maybe the DCT hasn't been figured out yet unless it's used from a different car. You know, so it's not completely new. And now your business is to get them new and to give us the, you know, sort of the no hype version of, you know, the honest testing and of course the long term when you guys do the long term stuff. Is something like a C8 where they're converting a plant over and starting from scratch and completely new everything. It's a big investment for them. What's your thoughts on, should people order one because they love it and they want to have it, or should they wait a year or two and get some bugs worked out?
You know what? It's a bit like when your iPhone or your Android, they send a software update.
Yeah.
And like the super geeks get it in beta form and then it comes out for real. And we said, I'll give it 6 months. Let them. And then, you know, we saw it recently. Apple did an upgrade. And then within 3 or 4 days, they were desperately ironing out the bugs. You're right. These things are so complex that typically you would want to wait a good 6 months before you get into the car.
Is 6 months enough time for a manufacturer to get feedback and make changes? Because I think of Alfa Romeo Giulia, a car that I was such a fan of on paper.
I don't think they ever bothered to fix anything in the entire life cycle of...
Right.
Oh, you mean, the current Giulia. Oh, sorry. I'm thinking historically.
No, the current
Giulia. I was going back in time for a moment to offer
Like a few years ago, they announced it on an auto show, and I'm like, I love this idea.
Yeah,
it's a
it looks
good
great.
Looking, hot little, you know, four-door, you know, 505 horsepower turbo. You know, it's like everything about it I loved. I love the idea of having a little Italian version of what the Germans have been doing. And it just seemed kind of plagued with some flaws and some drivability issues. And you know, it's been a few years now, and I don't know that those bugs have been worked out.
It's a tough one because if you look, I mean, the obvious one that in our experience that was really guilty of this was our Model 3. We got a very early Tesla Model 3.
Yeah.
We bought it, and for the first few months, it was junk.
It was
terrible. And if you read our long-term test reports, it's... You know, we got a lot of stick. The car was that had so many problems. Actually, now partly because Tesla does over-the-air updates. You know, and credit to them, they do that. You know, for the past 6 months, touch wood, it's been great. So, you know, that is a case in point. Now, Tesla probably takes it to an extreme in that they're using customers as early adopters as test drivers, effectively.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of reservations around that, particularly around things like autopilot.
Yeah. I've had some opinions about Tesla.
But if you get into like the Corvette, there's always this trade-off because people want the first, you know, I understand the feeling that you want to be the first person in a mid-engine Corvette. You want to drive around LA or Boston or wherever you are and feel like a hero. I completely get that. Are there teething troubles with every new car? Yeah. I mean, Ram had a bunch of problems, we know, with the 1500 when it was new. You know, you need... There are always bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But the
1500 is good now.
The 1500 seems to be a lot of the problems seem to be solved. There's a bunch of recalls on ours. So give it some time. And it depends on, you know, some of these things can be irritations and some of these can be a major problem that actually takes the vehicle off the road. So, you know, you're always going to be trading this desire to be first with, you know, the kind of rationale. If you were being completely cold-hearted about it, I would say give it at least 6 months before you jump in.
Should people be afraid of recalls, or is that just part of the process now? Like, it's not that big of a deal. You take it in, you get it fixed.
I think it's a bigger deal. It's a hassle factor. I mean, obviously, it depends what it is.
Right. You know, if it's a Takata airbag or like a fuel pump issue and there's fire involved, right?
But But generally, it's more about the hassle. You know, you and I both have classic cars, and, you know, you accept certain things about that. But with a modern car, you don't think of a modern car as unreliable.
Yeah.
So if anything that takes you away from work and into the shop to have something fixed or recalled is going to be a hassle. And when we look at how people use Edmunds, what people are looking for, you know, reliability is so important to people because, you know, particularly in the US, particularly in California, everybody commutes all the time. You know, the car becomes your staple of your life, and if it breaks down, it's big drama.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into your Corvette build. I was at the launch. They said it starts at under 60,000. It was 59,000, whatever, 59,995. And then they immediately said, by the way, next year it's not going to be under 60,000. It's going to be like 61,000 and change, so, or 62,000. So only the first year is under 60. And then it's going to be a slight bump. I don't know if it's going to make much of a difference to anybody, but it's, like, if you're buying that car, who cares? So you're starting at about 60,000. What do you buy?
So this is always the question, isn't it? Because every car has a starting price, and very few cars of any description are ever sold at the starting price.
Right.
And normally that's just a bit of marketing nonsense to get you, you know, for the headline. This is what we've come up with, what we believe is the ideal spec for a mid-engine Corvette at the moment. So you start off with a 2LT, which is 67,295. That gives you the sort of basic technology kit and everything else that you'd want. You then add $500 for rapid blue paint. And to be fair to GM, you know, we're used to, you look at Porsche's option prices, and we had a 992.
Well, the GT500 orange was $500, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you throw $500, by the way, that blue is fantastic.
It is. But, you know, look at what Porsche charges for paint. You know, GM at least is being sensible. Because my big concern is, 60,000. Oh, but it's 100,000 by the time you add, you know, wheels and paint.
wheels and paint. So it's funny, those are options.
$500 for paint. Then you want the Z51 kit, which is another $5,000.
Right.
That gives you the suspension performance package, which I think if you're buying a Vet, you want that.
Right, it's got the sticky tires. It's got the
different
tuned suspension. The Z51 is kind of a no-brainer.
The exhaust, etc. That's the no-brainer.
Actually, that sounds inexpensive to me.
But that's also the only one where you're like, you kind of need that.
Yeah.
$1,895 for magnetic ride control, performance traction management. Again, you might say, well, that's super desirable.
So $5,000 for the.
So $7,000 for the tune, basically.
Right. What was the track pack or handling pack on the GT500?
Depends, because you kind of add it up. 1,500. Yeah. Then you've got the carbon pack is really just carbon.
Right. The carbon one is off the table, but you got handling pack anyway.
Yeah, it already comes with $1,500, I think. So yeah, the Magna Ride and stuff is already in there.
Okay.
Carbon flash open spoke wheel, that's $1,000. That's just aesthetic. That's just us. GPS front axle lift system.
I love that idea.
You've got to have that idea. Any car like this, do not buy any car like this without front axle lift of any description.
If you haven't heard me talk about this before, quickly tell them what this is.
So we've got used on particularly mid-engine supercars where you're just grinding the nose the whole time. So never buy a McLaren without this system, for example. Now, most of them, you actually have to manually flick up and down.
They're kind of slow. And the only one that's fast is the Ford GT.
Yes.
That thing pops in the air like a lowrider.
That also feels like, you know, when you come into the pits at Le Mans, it goes boom.
Yeah.
That's the same gig, I think. It's a little hydraulics. Apart from that, they're all super slow and irritating. This is actually claiming to use GPS technology. So it learns. You can set points. So if you're on your commute home, the car will automatically.
Yeah.
You've got to have a lot of faith in it.
You buy the car. You drive it around, and as you're going to places and you're hitting the front axle lift, the front nose lift, you're going into your driveway, going into a parking garage, going to the mall you go to, going to see your therapist for the money that you spent, like all that stuff. And each time you do it, the car will basically, some version of it, will go, do you want us to remember this one? And be like, yes, I do. And then it uses GPS, and as you get approaching that area, it'll do it for you. You don't have to hit the button every time.
I tell you what, you've got to have a lot of faith, haven't you? You've got a lot of faith that's going to work.
And if it doesn't tell you, like if you're rolling up to your garage and you're like, it didn't work. GPS is down.
But who's
it's
liable?
Cloudy out. Yeah, yeah. Who's to blame for that? And then maybe it'll tell you, hey, axle's not lifted. I don't know. Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out. But anyway, great idea.
Great idea.
Axle lift is great.
$1,500.
And the GPS version.
And the GPS. Yeah,
and you can store, GPS. I don't know, some crazy amount, like 1,000 points.
Speed bumps, yeah. Then we get into some silly stuff. Edge red calipers. I mean, you've got to have that.
Well, what color? Oh, you got blue. You ordered a blue car.
So we got a blue car. So
with the red calipers.
With the red calipers. That's worth a second a lap. That's $595.
Okay. So it costs, red calipers cost more money than the entire paint job.
That's true. Yeah. That's true, yes. Yeah. But still worth it.
Okay.
GT2 seats. There's a bunch of different seat options. The GT2 seats feel like the best compromise for us. $1,500.
Did you look at the seat options? Did the seat options range from 0 to 5,000, or are they around?
And also, it's like how clenched do you want your buttocks to be?
Yeah.
So you can either have like the fat American version where you just kind of loll around, which probably doesn't work too much, or you can get into that kind of mid.
The fat American version. Okay. Jeez.
We've gone for GT2, which is buttock clenching.
So you got the skinny
but okay.
British seats. Is that the version you guys ordered?
What else? This is red seat belts to match the calipers. That's 300.
Okay, well, what color is the interior?
Black.
Okay.
So the concern is it looks like a black hull in there. So you need a bit of color, particularly for photos. Important for us, of course. Red seat belts.
Okay.
$395.
Okay.
That's a lot of money for seat belts.
It's a lot of money for seat belts.
Engine appearance package that like puts the engine cover red.
Yeah.
$995.
Yeah. It's actually a good looking engine. Like, you know, they put the plastic bits over to make it look fancy, but they did a good job. It's a cool looking engine.
And then, that's not the red bit. The red engine cover separate. The engine appearance package, I think, is like LEDs and stuff. It just gives you a bit of
lights it up.
And then museum delivery. I think if you buy one of these, it's $995, so it's an indulgence, but it's fantastic to go to the museum and get all the kind of...
Right, but that's a great content piece for you guys. That's,
exactly.
You know.
So you add all that together, and you end up with $81,655. So you've added $20,000 to the absolute base of a Corvette. I would argue of those...
Yeah, it's 18.
Of those, I would argue that probably $8,000 to $10,000 of those are must have. So $5,000 for the performance suspension, $2,000 for the Magna Ride, GPS you got to have. That's 1.5. So probably $10,000 is a must. So if you're just going for performance, you're going to be spending early 70s. But then with the technology package, late 70s. So
okay.
I would say that, you know, we always look at this with 911s and everything. The kind of natural price of a Corvette, where I'd expect most of them to change hands at, is around 80.
Now, how much can you spend on a C8? Are there more options? Can you make it $100,000? All kinds of carbon bits and stuff? Like, could you go that far with it? Or
I reckon you could probably get it to 100, but not much more. And then, of course, we'll see the other models coming in. And the cabriolet, the convertible adds 7.5, I want to say.
Something like that. Yeah. That looks good, by the way. I'm not super into convertibles, but the convertible hardtop, and it does look good.
With those sort of buttresses. And yeah, we went to Florida and had a look at that. They did a big event over at...
And they made a big, you know, they made a big a fuss over the structural integrity is the same. It doesn't add a lot of weight, and all the storage is still the same.
Well, the standard car's a Targa. So actually, you're kind of saying, well, how much do you need a convertible if the standard car's a Targa anyway?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you're buying...
You want to take the top off by yourself or not?
And drive it at night.
Right. And drive it at night.
But we're actually getting a Corvette in... not ours. That's not going to be early next year. But we're actually getting a Corvette in next week. So we're working on our Edmunds Top Rated Awards at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting in that for appraisal. So we're actually spending some proper time in it this time.
Do you guys ever take cars to the dyno? Or the Shelby, does it make sense to take it to the dyno and see what kind of...
It does, and we probably will with our long-term cars, yeah. We do, depending on the car.
Yes.
It's a bit
you
like
got to do it with the cars that you buy, because I feel like there's a little trickery going on with some of these media cars. I remember specifically driving Lexus LFAs, like two of them, like at the same track day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this yellow one feels good. Got on the black one. I was like, this black one is fast as shit. They're like, well, it's got a prototype tune in it. I was like, so you're making it hot for us, or you're dumbing down the other press car? Like, I'm curious.
The worst example of this, you remember when Volkswagen did those 1.8 turbo engines, five-cylinder, mm-hmm. 1.8 turbo engines? And they did them, and I think if I remember correctly, there was like 150 horsepower, 180, 210. Then you went up to like 285 for an Audi S3 and things like that.
Yeah.
There was so much cheating going on with those ages. You like get a little Skoda, which will do 0 to 60 in 5 seconds. It was like that. If you go back, if there's some fantastic MG, if you ever look, if you want to, if you're in bored moment, Google the MG Maestro Turbo, which was a terrible British car from the '80s. But they ran a whole commercial campaign faster than a Ferrari, faster than a Porsche. It's all nonsense.
It's all nonsense.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway. I can't get sued now. It's a long time ago.
I do want to ask a couple questions about Explorer, Ford Explorer. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Dodge, our friends at Dodge. Visit your local Dodge dealer for performance, technology, and great deals. Never has there been a better time. Right now, Dodge is offering Power Dollars. With Power Dollars, you get $10 off for each horsepower of your new car. Every Dodge Charger, every 2019 Durango, every 2019 Challenger, you can get a deal. This means if you buy a 2019 Dodge SRT Hellcat Redeye and receive an almost $8,000 cash allowance. Get more power, get more off. It's that simple. Hurry to your local Dodge dealer today and take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. I went and drove the Ford Explorer. This is a very important car for Ford, vehicle for Ford. You know, good size, three row, a lot of brand equity in the name Explorer. I love the Lincolns as well, the Aviator, and I just drove the Corsair and a couple of the other ones. Looks like Ford is kind of flubbing the launch of the Explorer. What's going on with that thing?
Yeah, they've had some. When you see flubbing the launch, it's actually more about the build than the.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
There's two things, yeah. They've had a lot of.
They've already recalled it for an issue.
Yeah, and they've been moving cars from one plant to another to sort out some of the problems. I mean, it's what we were talking about earlier, how it's easy to underestimate how difficult and complex it is to launch a new vehicle. But the Explorer is one of those cars that, you're right, it's a staple, not just of Ford, but of kind of American life, isn't it? It's such an important vehicle. And the last one had been around for 10 years. So. You know, they've gone to great lengths to, you know, rear-wheel drive platforms, and that platform also is shared with the Lincoln Aviator. So hugely important to Ford. Honestly, Mike, I know they've had problems with the production, but we've also had three different variants into the office. It's not the greatest car ever.
It's really?
It's just, I know you did the launch kind of like it. There are certain things about it. I think the fundamental engineering is good. But you look at some of the interior quality and some of, you know, like material choices, not just how it's built, but what it's built with, and it just doesn't feel like it. You know, things like the Kia Telluride, which are also built in the US, so you haven't even got that excuse. You know, it's are just a step beyond it, and it's going to hit. We rank all the vehicles in each class, and, you know, this is going to, we're still finalizing some of it, but this is not going to be in the top three or four. It might even be down sixth or seventh as we sort of go finalize the testing process. So,
and who what's that test look like? What are you going up against? You mentioned the Kia Telluride, which I haven't driven yet, and I actually kind of like.
The Telluride's
like,
a fantastic vehicle.
Yeah.
It looks fantastic.
How do they come out with a from-scratch new vehicle and nail it, and so many other companies can't? Where's the quality assurance process with these companies?
Do you know what the problem sometimes, and having kind of worked with the industry a little bit on some of this stuff, is when you – it's almost like a mindset thing. And I don't know this for certain, so I'm hypothesizing, but so bear with me. But one of the problems with cars, particularly from the big manufacturers over recent years, or going back like two or three decades, is that a lot of it is focused on customer clinics. And a lot of people saying, well, we want what we've got, but we want to this and this needs to improve. So everybody says, okay, we'll take what we've got, we'll improve this and this and this. And then they look at maybe what their rivals are doing at the moment and say, well, is it better than, you know, the equivalent GM or something? Oh, yeah, well, that's better in this way.
Yeah.
And then you launch it. But the problem is, in the meantime, others come along and just basically take a clean sheet of paper like Hyundai has with the Palisade and Kia with the Telluride, which are fundamentally the same
thing.
Which they
didn't really have a vehicle in that segment, so they were able to start with a clean sheet.
And honestly, you know, you get into the Telluride, particularly if you go for one of the higher spec ones, and it feels more like it's inspired by a BMW, you know, Q7 or something like X7.
What's the price point of a Telluride?
It starts in the 30s. I mean... But also, you know, mid-30s. I mean, even you get a really nice spec one, you're into the 40s. I mean, I'm not saying it's a cheap car, but it sounds inexpensive.
Everything is expensive these days.
Yeah, the other problem is the Explorer is more expensive, significantly more. So you've got a car which actually the interior quality isn't as good, costing more money, and, you know, it's just we've ended up being a little bit disappointed with it. And that's a shame because actually it was a car that, you know, seemed like it had real integrity, the engine. It was something car that we wanted to like. And then you layer on that some of the manufacturing problems and the bad press that they've had. And the trouble is with launching cars, you need to get it. You need to get the launch right because you only launch these things once. And, you know, history is littered with examples of cars that were actually pretty sound but were launched badly and a few things went wrong. And then they just get tarred with that.
And what do you think is happening? Do you think they're rushing at some point? Do you think it's like marketing things or timing things or somebody has to beat the other competitor on a launch? Like, I never got the feeling that building and launching a car was a rushed process because we see concept cars and then we see the real car 3 years later.
It shouldn't be on a vehicle like this. Sometimes like McLaren launched the MP4 12C too early because they had to get the cash flowing and Private will probably admit that now, but something like the Explorer is such a staple product. It's not like Ford doesn't do those things. But I'll give you an example that just seems bizarre. Now, we're all into Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Mm-hmm. If you go for the up-spec Explorer, which has a vertical screen in the middle, which they made a big play about, and you plug in your Apple CarPlay, then it ends up being so narrow as to almost irrelevant. And so little details like that, you kind of go, why?
So, but that could be a software upgrade, right?
Like well, no, but the actual point, real estate of the screen, because it's a portrait scheme screen instead of a landscape screen, and now, CarPlay set up for landscape.
And isn't CarPlay doing a software update on their version, like in a month or something like that? Because we heard about
some
of it's
come out
to
already with the new iOS system, but we digress. I mean, the reality is a company like Ford, with all their experience and all the know-how, should not be making a hash of the law. I mean, you can assess the product and decide whether you like it or not. That's one thing. But, you know, to make a big hash of the launch, and it affects your share price, it affects morale, you know, it's easy to get into a kind of negative spiral about this stuff.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, at the same time, you know, obviously there's been all the strikes at GM and, you know, and companies like Kia are knocking it out of the park, and they're building them in the U.S.,
We've been driving and testing a lot of the SUVs recently. We've been just sort of doing a little bit of our own little opinion valuations on SUVs, driven a bunch of stuff. I got the RAV4 hybrid coming in like today as we're here sitting here and recording. Got a CRV coming in like after SEMA, you know, a little different for us for what we do here. But I am very interested in driving that Kia Telluride. So curious to know what Kia is doing with that. It looks good, and is it as good as you're saying? Like, if it, I expect it to be good, and now in that price range that you're talking about, that's significant for Kia.
It is, and actually, what you're finding there's examples of Telluride going above sticker price. It's that much in demand.
Don't ever pay that. Don't get me started on those goddamn markups.
I'm not getting you started on that. But it's. Yeah, it's just a great vehicle. And now and again, a manufacturer comes along and just comes out with a vehicle. We've just done a triple test on video, which is coming out very shortly, of the Telluride versus Palisade versus Explorer.
Okay.
And without giving the game away from the way I'm talking, you probably imagine what wins.
Explorer doesn't win.
And just occasionally, a manufacturer comes out with a vehicle where they just absolutely nail it. They absolutely nail the sweet spot. And the Telluride really feels like one of those. I mean, it's about the same money as a Honda Passport, but you've got three rows of seats. It looks great. It's just a great job. And what's nice is it's actually selling. And when I look at – we have data on Edmunds about what people are searching for, what cars are being researched on the site. It's in the top five, which is crazy for a three-row SUV.
Yeah. I wonder what they're doing with the marketing, who they're targeting. But all right, as usual, you guys can go to edmunds.com/roadnoise and catch up on all of this stuff. Go there every day. Just go in there every day.
Some people do. Lots of people do.
You know, it's like logging in your social media. You're checking what's going on. Just go to edmunds.com/roadnoise. Hit it for a few minutes every day. You'll feel good. You'll feel better about yourself. You'll learn more. You can follow our
own. You can bore people in the pub.
Yeah, there you go. You can follow Alistair. He's Alistair Weaver on Twitter, and he's Weavometer on Instagram.
I am indeed.
Yes. I don't know why I laugh every time I say it, but I got it right. Weavometer on Instagram. You can follow me, Moderator. I'm on all sorts of social media up there. You can follow Goldberg as well. You guys know where he is. Goldberg Garage. Goldberg95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram.
Oh, for 1.8 million Instagram followers.
Yeah. How many do you have?
Me?
Yeah.
Not 1.8 million.
No. Well, you're going to get a few more right after this.
Okay, there we go.
There you go.
Make me feel less lonely.
Wivometer, tell them Large March sent you. Tell them Carcast sent you. What else is up? What's new with Edmunds? We're going to see you next month or something. We're going to head out to SEMA. You're going to SEMA for your first time ever?
Second time.
Second
last
time.
I had dinner with you last year, remember?
Oh, yes.
I'm glad it was memorable.
Wait, we did? We had dinner last
year? We did. We sat in a casino, enjoyed a late night whiskey.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's probably why we don't remember.
Yeah, probably. All my dates end that way.
We've got a lot going on at SEMA as well. Of course, Adam Kroll and I will be there. Goldberg, I believe he said he's going to be in the Weld Wheels booth on Tuesday with his green challenger. And Adam and I will be in the K&N Filters booth Tuesday morning to do a live car cast. We're going to do a big episode, and I believe we're just locking it in, so don't tell anybody, but possibly our good friend Patrick Long, right? Porsche race car driver, will be a guest.
Patrick.
Patrick Dempsey will be a guest. Our friend
Dr. Dreamy.
Yeah. McDreamy. I think that's what they call him. Yeah. I have not watched the show.
Just don't have any photo next to him.
Yeah. He's like, I feel like we got to go on a diet, just lose some weight just to go do the live show, get photos with him. Our good friend Gard Hollinger from Arch Motorcycles and possibly his business partner Keanu Reeves could be there live in the booth doing CarCast with us. And a couple of other guys as well. So that will be Tuesday morning, 9:30-ish. In the K&N Filters booth in Central Hall. I will be doing Shift and Steer podcast every day from the Magnaflow booth in Central Hall. We've got a great lineup of guests for that as well. And then Wednesday morning, CarCast live again in the Magnaflow booth with Hot Wheels. Tuesday afternoon, myself, Adam Carolla, Jay Leno, and a bunch of other guys will be judging the finale of the Hot Wheels Legends Tour. The winner of that gets their vehicle made into a Hot Wheels car.
That's so nice. We
are going to be judging that. We're going to pick the winner. We're going to interview the winner and announce the winner Wednesday morning, probably 9-ish, 9:30-ish, Wednesday morning, a live podcast also in the Magnaflow booth in Central Hall. So we got a lot going on. And I'll be there all week. We'll be running around doing interviews. Looking forward to seeing you there. And what's anything else to touch on Edmunds? Edmunds.com/roadnoise, if you weren't familiar. That's the website.
Yeah, we have a whole bunch of new stuff coming in. A really busy time. GT500 test this week. Video launching there. Big triple test coming of the Explorer versus Telluride versus Palisade. New feature on the cheapest cars on sale as well. You know, we talked a lot about Exotica, but we got a feature on the cheapest cars available. You know, under 15,000 gets you a brand new car.
I didn't know you could buy something under 15,000.
And actually, you know, like Nissan Versa, Nissan's just brought out a new Versa. This is a nice, you know, there's plenty of safety kit, there's technology, you can get the Apple CarPlay and everything else. This is a good little car, you know, well under 18,000 bucks or something, or just over 15, I think it starts at. So, you know, we've been taking a look at
so a $15,000 Versa has CarPlay and a Rolls Royce doesn't.
Yeah, there's some madness out there. Tesla doesn't either. But so that's kind of fun as well. So we're getting the market covered, and there's, you know, there's tons of new stuff coming out. We're in the process of judging our top rated awards. Maybe we'll talk about that next time we come on, and that'll be announced mid December. But that's a big deal for us. We're shooting that next week, and we've got two through the night shoots at a secret location. So we literally start filming at 6 p.m. and carry on through the night.
And you're going to bring in some news about LA Auto Show as well?
LA Auto Show is coming up 27th of November. That looks like it's going to be a great show. SEMA first. So, yeah, there's a huge amount happening from supercars to $15,000 hatchbacks.
Love it.
We got it all.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.